5 more minutes of this, I can have a cigarette and order a pizza. Oh, hell with it. I'm going to smoke now.
Junk Food Dinner, Episode 70. This week, we revisit those cannibalistic humanoid underground dwellers, this time with more zombies, when we examine Chud 2, Bud the Chud, from 1989. Then the cannibalism continues when a captain during the Mexican-American War is stationed at a fort where tales of the consumption of human flesh soon become reality in the 1999 thriller Ravenous. And finally, two Valley girls survive the apocalypse in the horror comedy Night of the Comet from 1984.
Look, you know as well as I do, you got film freaks that go down on you for a bootleg print of that.
Welcome to Junk Food Dinner, Episode 70. This is the podcast where each week we scour the internet, video stores, and cable television, looking for the most outrageous and interesting cult films. We're not professional film journalists or critics by any means. We are simply three geeks from Ohio with entirely too much time on our hands. In Ohio, I am Kevin Moss, and I'm joined by my co-hosts Mark Fredo in New York and Parker Bowman in California. You know how this works. Every week, we'll each bring a cult favorite to the table, recalling our personal experiences with the film, discussing its merits, and arguing why we did or did not enjoy it. This week, we'll be following up last week's full-length commentary to Chud by taking a look at its sequel, Chud 2, Bud the Chud, from 1989. Then we'll talk about 1999's Ravenous, and finally, Night of the Comet from 1984. But first, gentlemen, how you doing this week?
Doing pretty nicely.
Yeah, I'm pretty good, too. I mean, it's not as good as Parker, it being his birthday and all.
It is my birthday.
That is not really true. Don't send any gifts.
Yeah.
Or well wishes.
Mm-mm.
Do not send me well wishes, please.
Yes.
I got no time for that. Positive vibes.
So what you guys been up to this week?
This is a hard question. Nothing. Yeah, nothing, I think, is the answer.
Sounds exciting.
Yeah. No, we watched a movie the other night called Return Fire, Jungle Wolf 2.
Sounds which, great.
Yeah. And that's actually the third movie in that series, not the second, if you can believe that.
Right.
But yeah, that was pretty nuts. But yeah, that's been about the highlight of my week.
Yeah, I've been reading the crap out of John Dies at the End, the book by David Wong.
So good.
Yeah, I'm about 150 pages in, and it's astounding.
Yeah,
I've been,
it's great.
So good. I've been wanting to read it for a long time. Like, I really loved John Cheese and David Wong when they were on, like, pointlesswasteoftime.com way back in the early days of the interwebs. And I finally got around to reading this book, and it's, oh, man, I can't wait for this movie to come out. I'm very stoked on this, on all
of this.
I
don't know. I'm hesitant about the movie just because of some of the stuff that happens in the book. I don't want to spoil too much. Kevin, do you know about this?
No idea.
Oh, I think you should check it out. I think you'd be real into it.
Okay. Yeah, so far, everything I've read in the book would lend itself to a movie, but yeah. I don't, there's probably crazier stuff that happens later on. That
I mean, my concern is not, you know, the subject matter. It's how they're going to approach, you know, the effects and some of the stuff that happens in the book as far as that goes. So, I don't know. Could be really awesome. Could look like a total butt, but I'm definitely interested. That book, yeah, it is totally captivating. I, like, could not put it down.
Excellent.
Yeah, so good.
Cool. Yeah, I had a fairly music-filled week on Wednesday. Junk Food Dinner's announcer, Juliet, she actually has a real radio show. Can you believe that? Not like this internet tomfoolery that we do. She actually goes out over the airwaves on a local NPR station, and my band went out there and played her show and interviewed with her, and that was a good time. And then this weekend, I played two shows. I did that show, like I mentioned last time, with Joe Jack Talcum of the Dead Milkmen, which was a good time. But on the show I played on Saturday, we played the Junk Food Dinner song.
Oh, nice.
And afterwards, somebody came up to us and was like, "Hey, I didn't know you guys did the theme song to Parker Bowman's podcast." And I was like, "You bastard! That is my podcast." But yeah, no, it was pretty funny.
For real, though, it's my podcast,
right?
Yeah,
it's everyone's podcast.
It's the world's.
I think what he really meant is that we've been using the Junk Food Dinner theme song on Pool Party Radio, so that's probably what he was talking about.
Oh, okay, I see how it goes.
that is super funny.
That's probably my brother or something.
Yeah,
the only person I know who knows that I do podcasts.
That's awesome.
All right, so let's get into some listener feedback. The first piece of listener feedback we got is from Sweden. They say, "Hey guys, my name is Linnea from Sweden. I'm 24 and go to Lund University. I love exploitation films and such, though I'm also an art house girl who loves classy Bergman and Tarkovsky films like that. Good combo with Samurai Cop. I had my wisdom teeth removed, awfully late in life too, the other day. I found Birdemic when you did that show and wanted to see it, but I finally got to it. I watched it with a friend and ended up messing up my stitches from laughing. I think you guys should check out some Czech New Wave films like Valerie and Her Week of Wonders and Daisies. They are great cult art films and crazy. Well, that's all. Thanks for all the great / terrible films and laughs. I love it." So thank you, Linnea. That's awesome. And it's cool that we're getting out to not only the female population, but the Swedish female population.
Yeah.
I'll take that demographic any day of the week.
Yeah, seems like if she got her wisdom teeth out, she probably spent a lot of time hanging out with her family.
Right. Yeah, I will probably get into these Czech New Wave films because Czechoslovakia is sort of near Serbia, and I think that they got some real nice art coming out of there.
Yeah, there's a lot of Czech New Wave stuff at Spectacle. I checked out some of it. It's pretty. See what I did there? But yeah, it's pretty bonkers. So yeah, we should probably get to that at some point.
Yeah, I have not seen either of these movies, Valerie and Her Week of Wonders or Daisies, but sounds pretty awesome just by title alone.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You love Daisies.
I do. The flower, the duck.
Fuentes.
Yeah.
It's a movie based on that Ween song.
Yep.
You would be into that.
I would. Another piece of listener feedback we got is from Selena Sipes. She says, "I really like your podcast. I stumbled upon it researching a retrospective on the Max, and it was lovely to see someone else actually remembered the series. Thank you so much for publicizing your nostalgia and making me feel like I'm not the only one." And that is from Selena. So thank you, Selena. Yeah, that Max episode was a lot of fun to do. Mark, I don't think you were there for that one, were you?
No, I think I was at camp.
Yeah, well, it was a lot of fun going back and watching those Max episodes after not seeing them since I was a kid. But yeah, that was a long, long time ago. So if you have yet to hear our Max episode, and we also talk about, I think we talked about The Brain on there.
Yeah, I was.
Think They Live was on that one.
Oh, yeah, and They Live. So yeah, definitely go check
classic
out that
episode.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was when I was out of town. You guys did a bunch of movies that I like.
Yeah, we wait for you to be out of town to pick all your favorite movies.
To pick the classic episodes.
Yeah. Next one we got was from a gentleman named Jonathan Knight. He says, "I've been listening to a few of your shows lately and loving what I'm hearing. I love the story of Ricky and wanted to let you guys know that it's being released on DVD and Blu-ray on September 27th. Kick
Hey-o.
Ass. So that's pretty awesome. I'll definitely have
We did it, you guys.
Yeah, we made it happen. Thanks to our review. But yeah, that's really cool. I would love to, because, you know, like we mentioned when we reviewed it, the only way to really see this in the United States right now is on a lot of dodgy, you know, bootleg DVDs or VHSs, and the subtitles are a little off, and the film quality isn't the best. So now that it'll get official DVD and Blu-ray release, it'll be nice to see it in all its full glory.
Yeah, for sure. Can really see that head explode.
Yeah, absolutely. The last piece of listener feedback we got was from our longtime listener and friend of the show, Vincent Lurch. He says, "What's up, guys? I really enjoyed the reviews of Hobo with a Shotgun and A Serbian Film. I've been hearing a lot about A Serbian Film, so I watched the trailer. Later when I got home, my fiance must have looked through the recent history and saw the trailer. She then questioned if there was something about me she should have known and sounded like she was about to call the wedding off. Let's just say I'm pretty much banned from that movie. Other than that, I got some suggestions. First, Full Moon Picture Films, any of them.
Oh, yeah.
Trancers, Puppet Master, Demonic Toys, etc. Second suggestion is Roger Corman films like Galaxy of Terror, Star Crash, etc. And three are Chopper Flicks, Chopper Chicks from Zombie Town, starring Billy Bob Thornton. He says, for some reason, I saw this as a kid and thought it was good. So yeah, that's awesome. We will definitely check out some of those. I mean, Full Moon Pictures and Roger Corman films, I think those are destined to be on the show at some point. I mean, we've done a few Roger Corman films here and there, but yeah, we'll definitely be getting to a lot more in the near future, I'm sure. And all the Full Moon stuff, I would also love to get involved in. If anybody out there has, I think this was a Full Moon release, a movie called Test Tube Teens in the year 2000. And if somebody has a copy of that and wants to send it to us, I really want to do that movie on the show because I have a hilarious story about it. But yeah, so we'll definitely get to some of those. So thank you for the kind words, Vincent, and thanks for listening. If you'd like to get in contact with us, please send us an email at jfdpodcast@gmail.com. Let us know what you think of the show or if you've got any recommendations for us. Or even better yet, let your voice be heard and give us a call on the Junk Food Dinner voicemail line at 347-746-JUNK. That's 347-746-5865. And let us know what you think. All right, so that being said, let's get into some nerd news.
From the global resources of Junk Food Dinner Worldwide, it's time for Nerd News.
All right, the first piece of nerd news that I have is it looks like a new Tales from the Crypt series is in development. It's been 15 years since HBO's horror series, Tales from the Crypt, ended its 7-season run. Someone said it's time for a reboot. The HBO series, which ran from 89 to 96, was an anthology show based on the popular EC Comics line from the 50s. The updated Crypt show is being developed by Gil Adler, who produced the original HBO series, and Andrew Cosby, co-creator of Eureka and co-founder of Boom Studios. Cosby explained a little bit about what we can expect from the new Tales from the Crypt. He said, "It will be an ongoing series that uses characters from the comic books in a more modern context. It's all about continually evaluating the genre for both existing fans and the source material and mainstream audiences." So yeah, it's going to be an hour-long series this time around. It's either going to run on HBO or on Cinemax, which is HBO's sister channel. So either way, it's cool to see that Tales from the Crypt, which I know is certainly one of my all-time favorite horror shows from back in the day, making its way back onto television. But I just hope they do it upright, and I hope they don't ruin Tales from the Crypt for everybody. But
I'm gonna go out on a limb here and say that they probably will.
I don't know. It could still be good as long as they get competent.
There's no Crypt Keeper.
Oh really?
Yeah.
Well, that's bogus.
I know.
Yeah. He's like the most.
So important I don't part. Know. I think it's a safe bet that we all love Tales from the Crypt, and I'm really, I'll probably check it out because I love Tales from the Crypt, but I am not holding out a lot of hope. It's certainly not going to be better than the originals.
Yeah, I think it would be cool. I mean, I think there's probably a lot of young directors that were fans of the show that would love to get on board and maybe direct an episode here or there. That's so if they get a talented pool of directors and they make the episodes fairly varied and unique, I'm sure there could be some gems amongst the newer stuff.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, like I said, I'll check it out, but I'm doing it cautiously.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not opposed to it being that it's like a reboot and everything like that, but I am sad that, I've been holding out hope that maybe there would be another movie hosted by the Crypt Keeper, like another Tales from the Crypt Presents movie, and now that's not going to happen. I mean, it was probably never, ever going to happen, but now it's definitely not going to happen.
Right.
So that makes me sad about this.
The next piece of nerd news that I have is it looks like Marvel is moving ahead with its Doctor Strange movie. It looks like they're going deep into the Marvel well after, the recent releases like Captain America and Thor. I mean, they've already done Daredevil. I mean, for Christ's sakes, even Elektra got her own movie. So they're kind of getting low on the Marvel characters. So dipping into Doctor Strange. Now, I've said this many times on the show. I've pretty much lost all interest in superhero movies from here on out. I don't know. It just seems like it's oversaturation of the market. And even if it's like there's a good one, especially if it's Marvel, I'm just like, I don't know. But Doctor Strange, that might be one I could get into because I remember as a kid being drawn to the psychedelic elements of the Doctor Strange comic book. And it could be.
He's got a nice collar, too.
Yeah, he's got a sweet collar, a mustache. Yeah.
Right.
And he dabbles in wizardry. So I think all those elements, if in the right hands, could be a winning formula.
Yeah, did they say who's going to play him or anything?
No, there hasn't been a lot of reports on who exactly is involved. They hired Thomas Donnelly and Joshua O'Penny to draft a script, and now these are the guys responsible for the Conan reboot and the a draft of Cowboys and Aliens, from what I heard is not so hot.
Really?
Yeah. All the reviews I've read have been pretty piss poor. But, you know, that might not mean anything. So, not a whole lot of details on the cast or director, even, of this Doctor Strange movie, but they are forging ahead. And we should probably see it, they said, in 2013. So, still a lot of time to go before Doctor Strange casts a spell on audiences. But, you know, I might be interested to check it out.
Yeah, I'll be interested. I just saw Thor and Captain America like a week and a half ago, and they were awesome. So I'm re-stoked on everything happening with comic book movies.
Okay. Well, I'll take your word for it. Next piece of nerd news I have. How about some original movies coming out? I mean, I know that's not very common on the nerd news, but I saw a trailer for a movie coming out next year called Sushi Girl. Have you guys heard of this?
No.
This is a crime thriller directed by Curran Saxton, who up until this point has only directed a handful of shorts, no feature length. But it features Tony Todd, James Duvall, Mark Hamill, and Michael Biehn.
Wow.
And it looks pretty awesome. There's not a whole lot of plot is really given away in the trailer. It's mostly just music and like cool action shots of people shooting guns and doing crazy stuff. But nevertheless, it looks pretty interesting. Mark Hamill looks like a total creep in it. He's got like long hair and glasses, and he's a little pudgy, and he's like some criminal mastermind, you know. And then of course Tony Todd is always cool, Candyman himself, and Michael Biehn from Terminator and Aliens in the Abyss is in there rocking out. So I mean, it looks like it's going to be like a fun stylized kind of action thriller thing. But yeah, it looks really cool. If you get a chance to check out the trailer, it's one that I'm definitely excited for.
Yeah, I just looked it up, and Jeff Fahey is in there, and that motherfucker is great. Count me in.
That is true.
Yeah, so it looks pretty cool. Like I said, I don't know much about the director. He hasn't really done anything yet, but it's also got fucking Sonny Chiba in there and Danny Trejo. So, I mean, it's just all around badassery. So check out the trailer and then sit on your hands for a year until it comes out in theaters.
Speaking of Danny Trejo and Jeff Fahey, did you see that Robert Rodriguez is planning on doing a Machete in Space movie?
I heard that. I mean, I didn't know if that was just like, you know, some off-the-cuff remark that Robert Rodriguez made to some paparazzo, and then it got legs online. But if that's real, that's awesome.
Yeah, well, that's the word. He says he's going to do the sequel, like Machete Kills, and then Machete Kills Again is going to be the third one, and it's going to be in space, and I'm very excited.
Jesus.
I really hope that happens, though. That, I mean, just to talk about it, it would give us nerd news for years.
That's true. And it can be our 800th movie, and we'll do a commentary for it. It'll be great.
Next piece of nerd news that I have is it looks like a director has been hired for the Fight Club author Chuck Palahniuk's Invisible Monsters. The novel Invisible Monsters has been optioned on and off since 2001 with multiple writers trying to do the script. Recently, developments have been made on the film, and a director has been attached. It is Samir Rahim, whose credits include Degrassi, The Next Generation, and Skins. So I don't know. I've never read this book. I think Chuck Palahniuk, he's super overrated. I mean, if you go into like any person's house our age, chances are they have at least three or four of his books on their shelves. And I mean, he's all right. Fight Club was really good, and some of his stuff is all right, but I don't know. I'm not super huge into that guy. So, but if it's anything like Degrassi, The Next Generation, I might be might be interested. Have you guys read that book?
I tried to and got halfway through it and gave up.
Yeah, I don't hate Chuck Palahniuk. I like a number of his books that I've read. I thought Survivor was really good, and Fight Club and a couple of the other ones were pretty good. But this one I did not like at all. So I don't care that they're making a movie out of it.
All right. The final piece of nerd news that I have is I think last year, was it last year or the year before when Expendables came out? You know, we talked about it, and I think all of us kind of had the same reaction. Like, super excited to hear about all these action guys getting together and kicking out one last film. But I think I still have yet to see it, so I have not been intrigued enough to actually check it out. But how about this for Expendables 2? They're going to throw two more badass action stars of yesteryear into the mix. We've got Chuck Norris and John Travolta joining the mix. So this time around in Expendables 2, we got Sylvester Stallone, Jason Statham, John Travolta, Arnold Schwarzenegger, Chuck Norris, Jean-Claude Van Damme, Dolph Lundgren, Mickey Rourke, and Bruce Willis. So, I don't know. They're really, really stirring it up. I don't know how many explosions and roundhouse kicks you can have in one movie, but apparently you're going to find out.
Well, I don't know. Until they announce Mr. T, I'm steering clear of this one. The first one was pretty bad.
Was it? See, I didn't even see it. It sounds good on paper, but it's never one that I'm like, I'll throw that in tonight.
Yeah, like, I mean, everything that they say about these movies is like, oh, it's an ensemble of all these great guys. But, I mean, the first one was basically just the Sylvester Stallone, Jason Statham buddy hour. And everybody else, like, I don't even think Randy Couture, who was in it, like, I don't think he got any lines. Like, everybody else who isn't Sylvester Stallone and Jason Statham didn't have any lines. Like, they were just in the background. And I guess that's an ensemble piece now. So,
right.
It's pretty bogus.
Yeah. Well, this will probably be more of the same.
Yeah.
All right, well, let's get into some of the cool stuff on DVD and Blu-ray this week. If you're like us and you like, you know, buying movies every now and again when you're not just rampantly stealing them from the internet, here are some of the ones that you might want to pick up this week. First one, we don't usually start off with TV shows, but this is a pretty bad week for DVDs and Blu-rays, and this is definitely the best one coming out. We got Eastbound and Down, the complete second season from last year, starring Danny McBride, makes its way onto DVD and Blu-ray. Danny McBride, of course, playing Kenny Powers, the once top-of-the-world pitcher who has turned to a life of debauchery. And this season finds him down in Mexico. And I watched this when it originally aired, and it was hilarious. I love that show. I think it's some of the funnier pieces of comedy released in recent memory. And, yeah, it's just an all-around good time. Have you guys seen this second season of Eastbound and Down?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It is hilarious.
Real funny.
Yeah, and I was worried for it because I heard that it was going to take place down in Mexico, and like that's a hard thing to do for a TV show, to just like give up all the other characters besides the main character and start fresh somewhere.
Right.
And it didn't miss anything. It was awesome.
Yeah, it was real good.
So funny.
More TV on DVD this week. We've got Mystery Science Theater 3000 versus Gamera, the Mystery Science Theater 3000 21 Deluxe Edition box set. This is the, you know, anyone who ever watched Mystery Science Theater knows that the Mystery Science Theater guys had a love-hate relationship with the Gamera films. They watched quite a few of them and always had some pretty vicious and hilarious commentary to go along with the films. Well, now all of the Gamera movies that Mystery Science Theater 3000 watched are collected into one collection, and lots of bonus features recounting their love affair with the giant Japanese turtle monster. So if you like Mr. Science Theater 3000 and Gamera, definitely check that out. But again...
Yeah, I'll definitely sell my car and pick that up.
Right. next one we've got is Streetwalkin' from the Roger Corman's Cult Classics collection from 1985. They just really keep coming with these Roger Corman Cult Classics. But Streetwalkin' stars Melissa Leo, the Oscar winner from The Fighter. This is back in 85 when she was, a little bit younger. She played a teenage runaway forced into whoring herself out in the dark exploitation hooker drama that features, a lot of boobs and violence. And so if you like 80s hooker movies, and if it's anything like Angel, I think we all would, pick up Streetwalkin' from 1985. It also features Antonio Fargas, Julie Newmar, and Leon Randall Battenkoff. So... you know, I like gritty exploitation hooker movies, and I think this one could be right up my alley. Dark alley.
Dark hooker-filled alley.
Yeah. All right, the next DVD we have is Stakeland from earlier this year. This is a post-apocalyptic movie. Do you believe they're still making post-apocalyptic movies in this day and age?
No.
Well, they are. But
still don't believe it.
Yeah. After the fall of the United States, a vampiric scourge sweeps the nation, turning brother on brother and parent on child as the bloody hungry beasts take deeper and deeper hold upon the land. It's hard for the survivors to know whether to be more afraid of the creatures themselves or the violent religious groups that have sprung up in response, but there's clearly only one choice, fight or die. So, yeah, I don't know. This seemed like a pretty cool take on the post-apocalyptic formula, putting vampires and the religious right into the mix. I don't know. I think this is pretty much straight to video. It might have had a small theatrical run. But nevertheless, now that it's out on home video, I might check this out.
Yeah, I thought it was a documentary, an expose on the beef industry.
But no.
I guess vampires are all right.
Yeah. Yeah, if it was about a meat-themed theme park, that would have been sweet. If you got a Blu-ray player, you can pick up some cool ones this week. We got Conan the Barbarian from 1982 and Conan the Destroyer from 1984. No doubt going hand-in-hand with the new remake that is going to be out in theaters soon. But if you want to wash your mouth of that disgusting taste, pick up the originals and see Arnold doing Barbarians how they were supposed to be done. Also on Blu-ray, another 80s classic, Better Off Dead, featuring John Cusack, is out on Blu-ray this week. I don't know if it's worth chucking your DVD for the new Blu-ray version, but this is a hilarious 80s comedy that I love very much. If you haven't seen it, now would be a good chance to check it out. Also on Blu-ray, we've got The Magnificent Seven from 1960. Now, this was you want to talk about a manly cast. Forget The Expendables. We've got Steve McQueen, Charles Bronson, Yul Brynner, James Coburn. Those are some fucking men. Get this Blu-ray and realize what a giant pussy you are compared to these men.
It's true.
And the last DVD I have is Dark of the Sun, remastered from 1968. I don't know much about this movie. It stars Rod Taylor and Yvette Mimeo and is directed by Jack Cardiff. But the cover alone makes me want to see it. Despite the fact that it's from 1968, it features a dude brandishing a chainsaw, fighting a shirtless dude, while explosions go off in the background. So, I don't know what that has to say about the movie, but chainsaw fights, explosions, I'm into it.
Yeah.
Dark of the Sun, 1968.
And then its sequel, Son of the Dark of the Sun.
Right. All right, well, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about our first film of the evening, Chud 2, Bud the Chud, from 1989, so stick around.
JunkFoodDinner.com is the world's oldest and sexiest website. Go to JunkFoodDinner.com for the latest episodes of the show. We also have all of our past episodes. You will also find news about the show, movie news, trailers, funny stuff, and links to our friends. You can also leave us log comments, because that makes us happy. We hope our website will be a good way for you to spend time during the downtime in life, when celebrities are not going hilariously crazy, and when the Warcraft servers are down.
I can't do it. We'll do it live. No. We'll do it live! Fuck it! Do it live! I'll write it, and we'll do it live! Fucking thing sucks!
I am a hungry man!
Cannibalistic humanoid underground dwellers. Prepare for horror, laughs, and thrills in this outrageous sequel to the home video hit Chud. Chud 2.
Bud the Chud.
Starring Brian Robbins from Head of the Class, Garrett Graham of Police Academy 6, Robert Vaughn, Bianca Jagger, Larry Linville of MASH, and many other popular stars.
A dead body is nothing to be afraid of.
He's suave.
Are you heterosexual?
He's charming. He's different.
Well, he eats people. I guess that could be interpreted as personality quirk.
He's Bud the Chud, a half-dead, decomposing humanoid, the result of a military experiment gone haywire.
Colonel Masters, there was a reason that these creatures were kept underground. For instance, the little matter of the drug's cannibalistic side effects.
Now he's loose on the town, spreading the horrifying Chud disease everywhere.
What in the wide world of sports is going on in here?
We're not just talking about some animated corpse. You got it? Everything it infects mutates.
The army, the police, and the FBI can't seem to stop this ravenous plague. But a group of clever kids might just chill the Chuds.
Unreal.
Chud 2. This Chud's for you.
Welcome back to Junk Food Dinner. The first movie we've got tonight is Chud 2, Bud the Chud. This is a movie, as we talked about last week, I saw the first Chud movie when I was little. My mom showed it to me. And I also, via that, got into Chud 2, and I got into Chud 2 way harder. I think, you know, because it's there's more Chuds, probably, is the main reason I got into it as a little kid. And, this was on USA Up All Night, or I might have even had a copy of it. Like, that's how much I watched it as a little kid. But I haven't seen this movie since I was probably 10. It's pretty hard to find, oddly enough, sadly enough, as it is the superior Chud movie, I feel. This movie stars the kid from Head of the Class as a slacker. He plays a kid named Steve Williams, not to be confused with Steve Dr. Death Williams, the professional wrestler, I suppose. And more importantly, it stars Garrett Graham, who plays Bud the Chud. He is a frozen Chud who's being experimented on by the government. Slacker, head of the class kid, and his nerdy friend. They have misplaced a body, so they need a new body. So they go to the Center of Disease Control to get this new body, which is a pretty flawless plan, I think. They get this Chud, they accidentally reanimate him, and he starts eating a lot of people. And that's your basic rundown. It all culminates at a Halloween party inside of a gym, as these things tend to do. And this film was directed by David Irving, who is apparently now one of the guys in charge of NYU's film department. So if you go to NYU for film, you should probably drop out, as this movie is not competently made by any means.
That's not fair.
But I still think it's very charming. This movie also started out, apparently, it was written to be a Return of the Living Dead sequel, but they couldn't get the rights or something was going on wacky with it. And they just pulled Chud out of nowhere and said, well, let's just apply all this stuff that we wrote that applies perfectly to the Return of the Living Dead universe and just throw it into Chud universe, which makes no sense because the Chuds were like these weird mole monster things with kind of snake heads that had eyes that glow. And they've turned now into just zombies with spiky teeth. And they're real wacky. And they're just zombies. They're just zombies. They're no longer Chuds by any means, the way that you may have known them from the original movie. As we learned in that movie, the only way to kill Chuds was to chop off their head. Or not the only way. I guess the only way we saw, but a way to kill them was to chop off their head. And that no longer does anything because these aren't Chuds. They're zombies. This movie also stars Norman Fell. It doesn't really star him. He's in one scene. But he played Mr. Roper on Three's Company. And I really, really like that show a lot. I watched like 3 episodes of that a day. And so I was really happy to see him. I was a little sad that there was like no double entendres about Bud being gay or anything, because that's what Norman Fell does so well. He thought that Jack Tripper was gay, and hilariousness ensued. But yeah, this movie, it's pretty bad. If you weren't in love with it when you were a kid, you would probably hate it, I would think. But seeing as to how I did love it as a kid, I do like it. I think it's very fun still. It's shocking. I guess this movie was rated R, which is shocking because the only gore that happens in this movie, like, there is no gore. Like, the way that Chuds kill people is to drag them off screen, and then a biting sound happens, and like a burping sound, maybe, and then that's it. And then that person's now a Chud. So I don't understand how this movie's not rated G, as nothing bad happens to anybody. But yeah, so I like this movie. How do you guys feel about it?
Well, yeah, unlike you, I did not see this movie as a kid, but I still found it pretty fun and enjoyable. I agree with you that it's better than the first Chud, which we talked about last week, was kind of a letdown with the lack of Chuds. I mean, the first one had Jonathan Hurd and Daniel Stern and a little bit of John Goodman, and this movie certainly doesn't have that star power or probably the budget. But nevertheless, I think this is infinitely more entertaining and fun, albeit in a very goofy and juvenile type of way. This is another movie kind of like I Was a Teenage Zombie, where we have self-aware zombies, which is kind of amusing. I mean, they do, you know, they go to stores and they buy new clothes and they do all sorts of clever ruse, and they can, you know, they can kind of talk a little bit, and, you know, they're aware. They know they're zombies, and they have their own thing going. So that, I always find that interesting, and it always makes for a pretty amusing comedy when you've got self-aware zombies. So that was fun. I thought that Brian Robbins, the main character Steve, the kid from Head of the Class, was majorly annoying. I mean, he's your typical 80s wise-ass protagonist character, and that's fine. I mean, he does a good job at that, but he starts to wear on you throughout. I did love Trisha Lee Fisher, who plays Katie, kind of the female friend in the group. She was enjoyable to watch on screen, and probably the best actor of the three kids. Bill Kevert, who plays Kevin, also was mildly annoying, if not just superfluous. but yeah, most of the fun comes from the behest of Garrett Graham as Bud the Chud, running around causing mayhem. And moreover, the wacky characters that inhabit this town that get terrorized by these Chuds, aka zombies. One of my favorites is this like middle-aged woman who's doing aerobics in her house. She has some pretty hilarious lines and some interactions with Garrett Graham that are pretty hilarious. Also, we've got a weird last-minute cameo by Bianca Jagger at the end of the movie, which was bizarre and misplaced, to say the least. Like you mentioned, Norman Fell, Mr. Roper was in there. That was great. And just a lot of, like, you know, goofy character actors that you would recognize make up this goofy town that comically fall prey to these self-aware zombies. So, I mean, it's a very goofy movie. It's very late 80s, and it's very slapsticky. I mean, I don't go into this movie looking for scares. It is very goofballish. But nevertheless, I think you'll have a fun time watching it if you can appreciate that kind of 80s tomfoolery. But yeah, I enjoyed it. Like I said, I thought it was more fun to watch than the original Chud.
I had never seen this, so I didn't really know what to expect. But given the name Bud the Chud, I should have had a better idea that this was not going to be scary or even, like, sort of a horror movie. Regardless, I did think it was pretty fun, for the most part. Like Kevin said, I think the strength of this movie really comes from all of the other people. I thought that Steve's parents were pretty awesome, especially his dad.
Totally.
Yeah, they were great, and the guy in the barbershop was awesome, and just, yeah, like, all these little things, I thought, made up some of the better parts of this movie. One thing that I really liked was that a lot of the jokes kind of took place in the background. You know, like, you'd have a character saying something kind of in passing away from the main action or the main dialogue. And one of them that I really liked was when the kids were out trick-or-treating. You hear kids discussing what they got, and one of the kids says, "I got a rock," which is one of my favorite, like, points of reference in pop culture, from the Charlie Brown Halloween special or whatever. So I thought that was really cool. And yeah, this is not a Chud movie. Those are not Chuds. They are zombies. They seriously could have just made a zombie movie and not called it Chud or Return of the Living Dead, and it would have been fine. But yeah, like I said, you know, I didn't hate this. I didn't love it, but yeah, overall, I think it's a fun watch, and I think it's worth, you know, if you have access to being able to see this, especially, again, you know, in a group or something, you should check it out, because it is kind of funny, and the details are what make it.
Indeed. One of my favorite gags that happens in this movie is there's a bunch of army guys looking for an escaped Chud, I think, in a hospital, and, you know, like, they're creeping up to a door. They're like, "Hey, I think he's in here." And they open the door, and a cat comes out and it scares everybody. Like, they play on that right. You know, stupid cliche that happens in all horror movies, but it's totally misplaced, and that's what makes it funny. There would be no reason for a cat to be
in this lab. Yeah, that's like right at the beginning too, which I thought, yeah, I did think that was funny.
Yeah, I think we would be remiss if we didn't mention the comedic performance of Robert Vaughn in this movie, who plays the Colonel Masters, the kind of the dude heading up this whole Chud army experiment, and he's kind of like the main, besides Bud the Chud, kind of the main villain in the movie. He's trying to get this, you know, experiment back, and he has a lot of real kind of goofy, slapsticky lines delivered in the, you know, deadpan sergeant. It was almost kind of reminiscent to me of the guy from Up the Academy in his sergeant comedy.
Oh, yeah.
But I thought he had a lot of really funny lines in this movie.
Yeah, he was real good. I like that guy. He was also in Joe's Apartment, which is a movie I care for quite a bit. So it was fun to see him here, not fighting cockroaches that sing.
Right.
I was pleasantly surprised to see that this held up, because, you know, like I said, I haven't seen it since I was 10. And so often when you go back to a movie that you haven't seen since you were 10, you're just like, man, this is garbage, and I'm upset. So I was happy that this held up, and I'm glad we got to watch it and all share in a movie called Chud that had actual monsters in it.
Yeah, but not Chuds.
Not Chuds, no.
So still less Chuds than the first Chud, because there's no Chuds in this.
Yeah. And only half of a Chud in the other one, so I guess...
Right. Yeah,
it would have been real easy to get more Chuds in this second one, but... If they even just had one Chud mixed in. Yeah. If they would have had just one Chud mixed in with all the zombies, that would have been more Chuds. But, oh, well.
And it also has a sweet theme song.
Oh, the theme song is so good. All the music is good.
I was going to say, the soundtrack to this is pretty bananas.
Yeah. Also, like, there's no logic in this movie whatsoever, and I think that's why I like it so much. Like I said, these guys, you know, they are going to school, and they lose a cadaver. And so they have to go steal a new cadaver rather than just hunt down the first cadaver, which is silly. And, like, they steal this cadaver, and then rather than taking it back to the school, or to the school, you know, to replace the first cadaver, they say, oh, well, let's do that in the morning. Let's just take this cadaver back to my house, where my parents are and stuff. Like, nothing adds up. Like, this entire plan that they have that obviously goes awry, like, nothing adds up in it, and I really appreciate that. I like when plans just have no logic at all, one bit.
Yeah. Yeah, unfortunately this movie is not available on DVD in the United States, so good luck hunting down a copy of it, unless you're in the UK, in which DVDs of this flow like wine.
Mm-hmm. You can't shake a stick without hitting a copy of Chud 2 if you're in England.
But here in the States, forget about it. Gotta find the VHS.
I blame Obama. The Chud ceiling.
We need to raise that Chud ceiling.
Yeah. We demand you fix this problem.
Mr. President.
Are you aware of this country's lack of Chuds? Yeah. So with that, I think we're going to take a break, and we'll be back to talk about Ravenous.
Correct.
I like saying I'm not certain, because I'm never certain.
Ravenous on the field. sending you to California, Fort Spencer.
We have four missing soldiers, Captain, and no bodies. We need a supportable explanation.
Captain John Boyd is about to discover...
No one just ends up at Fort Spencer. We come for a reason.
Yours being?
Well...
Something he never imagined.
We have a great sense of camaraderie here at Fort Spencer.
This Indian scout told me a curious story.
Wingigo.
It's an old Indian myth from the north.
Man eats the flesh of another. He absorbs the other man's strength.
Now, one man must choose.
We need others.
Between having dinner and being dinner. That's so annoying.
A la Major Knox.
Guy Pearce.
Ives!
I'm going to kill him.
Robert Carlyle.
He was tough, but then a good soldier ought to be.
Jeffrey Jones.
Let me bring you into the fold.
What's wrong?
David Arquette.
There's no guilt. I gotta eat. It's tough making friends.
Eat to live. Don't live to eat.
That was really sneaky.
Oh, he was licking me!
Ravenous.
Bon appetit.
Welcome back to Junk Food Dinner, episode 70. Up next on the program, we have 1999's Ravenous. This is a film that I found in a dumpster and had no idea what it was, but was intrigued by its crazy cast and soundtrack by Damon Albarn. So I took it home and checked it out, and it was awesome. The film itself concerns a group of settlers in the 1840s who are joined by, Guy Pearce, who has been sent there after his commanding officers learned of his cowardice when he hid under a pile of bodies to escape being killed. While he was in that pile of bodies, he drank some human blood and got a taste for it and gained the strength of many men. Which comes into play because that's what the movie's about. The rest of the movie is about him coming to terms with cannibalism and learning about the Wendigo, who is, according to legend, a monster who gains the strength of men by eating their flesh. So he has to avoid... eating people. That's pretty much it. This film has a really awesome cast. Guy Pearce, Robert Carlyle, Jeffrey Jones, David Arquette. I thought it was really interesting. I had really heard nothing about this when I saw it. Oh, Jeremy Davies is in this too, and I like him. So yeah, I didn't really know anything about this. I just kind of watched it and then watched it a few more times. It's one that I can always throw on and enjoy. The soundtrack is cool. The sets are pretty awesome. Some of the cinematography is pretty great. And like I said, awesome cast. So, what did you guys think of Ravenous?
I had never seen this before. I remember I was working at a Blockbuster Video when this came out, and I was intrigued by it, and I had several coworkers recommend it to me, but for whatever reason, never got around to seeing it. And then when you mentioned it for the podcast this week, I was instantly like, oh yeah, that was that movie I meant to see 10 years ago and never did. So now I'm glad I finally got around to seeing it, because I did enjoy this. I thought it was cool having the set, you know, during the Mexican-American War. It's one of these weird kind of psychological horror thrillers that is a period piece as well, which I always like when those are done right. I mean, they can be done to boring effect sometimes, but when they're done right, they're a lot of fun and can be genuinely, I don't know if scary is the right word for this movie, but kind of disturbing in some level. And I think
tense.
I think this movie definitely had that in spades. I think Guy Pearce does a really good job I really liked Robert Carlyle, who you might remember, if it's not a household name, he was in Trainspotting and The Full Monty. He's the creepy, skinny dude. And he does a really good job. He's the one that kind of introduces the whole cannibalism thing to this camp of guys. You know, you've got Jeffrey Jones, the principal from Ferris Bueller's Day Off, and Deadwood. He's in there. And you've got Jeremy Davies from Spanking the Monkey and Lost. He's like they're kind of like religious guy. Like everyone serves their purpose at this camp. Of course, David Arquette's the pot smoking fuck off. Even back during the Mexican-American War, they had dudes like that for David Arquette to play. But yeah, I mean, and so it's an interesting cast of guys. And so it starts off kind of fairly, you know, like a historical kind of war movie. And then it kind of devolves into this, you know, like Mark said, tense tale of cannibalism and gaining the strength of other men and stuff. So I thought it was really well done. I thought it never dragged at any point in time. I thought the action was always real quick and well-paced. I thought there were lots of interesting kind of plot turns throughout the movie that kind of kept you guessing and kind of interested in where this was going to go. And like I said, all the performances were great, as you'd expect from this crew of actors. So all around, really entertaining movie. I would definitely recommend giving this a watch if you have not seen it, or if you vowed to see it 10 years ago like me and never got around to it. So, yeah, I'm glad we got to watch this.
Yeah, I kind of downplayed some of the plot elements in my kind of terrible description of this at the beginning. But, yeah, like you said, there are a lot of twists and turns in this, which I was kind of surprised about. I sort of expected it to be relatively straightforward, but some of the twists were pretty great, and you know, I didn't really see some of it coming. And you know, when it gets towards the end, there's a lot of really cool fights and kind of confrontations and stuff. So definitely worth watching.
Yeah, I have a similar story to Kevin's, in that when this movie first came out, I was like, man, I need to see this movie. This looks really sweet. Like I saw the trailer or something, and then I just never saw it, as I do with so many things that I want to see desperately. I wait forever to see them. I'm something of a pleasure delayer, like they talk about in Vanilla Sky. This movie, it starts out with like a quote from Nietzsche, and after that quote, a quote from Anonymous that says, "Eat me." So I'm like, oh, all right, this movie's going to be more wacky and goofy, I guess, than I thought. Because, you know, if you have a quote from somebody saying, "Eat me," at the beginning of your movie, obviously it's probably not going to take itself too seriously. But then it starts out, and it, you know, at the beginning, it takes itself, you know, seriously. Like, it seems more like a drama than any sort of, like, goofy thing. And then things get kind of goofy when the horror starts happening. And I don't mean horror, like, as in a horror movie, because this isn't really a horror movie, but just the horror of the things that happen. And, like, so it seems like, you know, the more horrific things are, the goofier they are, which I thought was kind of a weird, like, weird thing to do. I thought, you know, that if... I don't know, like, I kind of would have preferred, like, I've already seen Cannibal the Musical, so I've seen goofy cannibalism. Like, I kind of wanted to see some straightforward cannibalism and some straightforward, you know, how does this happen? How does, you know, people eating each other come to be? And this movie kind of, you know, I thought that it couldn't really decide what it wanted to do in terms of either being, like, this weird, goofy sort of tale and being a straightforward tale. But that being said, I mean, it's very entertaining. The twists, like you said, are great. The performances are great. The music is fucking awesome.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, it's pretty great, but I mean, I don't know, like, there was just something kind of off about it, I thought, but I mean, it's still, I mean, I'd probably watch it again. Like, it was pretty good. Like, and, you know, there's a lot of parts that, you don't, like you guys said with the twists, like, a lot of stuff you do not see coming, and, I like when that happens, clearly. And, yeah, so, I mean, it's pretty good, but it could have been more good, I think.
Yeah, it's certainly not flawless. But I think in terms of movies that I've found in the dumpster, this is definitely, like, way up on the list. And one that I'm kind of surprised more people haven't seen.
Yeah, I mean...
You know, with a cast like this and with Damon Albarn doing the soundtrack, and it seems like this would have been a bigger kind of movie.
Well, yeah, I mean, like I said, I remember it had a little bit of a buzz about it when it first came out. I think on home video, I don't really think a lot of people saw this in the theater, if it even got... much of a theatrical release at all. But I remember when it came out on home video, there was a little bit of a buzz about it for a little while, but yeah, then it just kind of got shuffled into the annals of time and kind of forgotten. I mean, by myself, and it seems like largely everybody else as well. But it is a good movie, and like I said, the cast, I mean, if you were to cast this cast now, it would probably cost you 10 times as much, because all the guys in it have gone on to bigger and better things for the most part, except for Jeffrey Jones, who went on to smaller things.
He was in Who's Your Caddy. That's pretty solid.
I like how there's a character in this named General Slauson, who's played by a guy named John Spencer, who I always thought had a blues explosion, but apparently
not the case.
An older actor.
Yeah, speaking of Jeffrey Jones, like, that guy makes everything so much better. Like,
he is awesome
so
in this.
Yeah, he's really good in this. And I think he stole the show, which he pretty much does in every movie he's in, so it's not hard for him to do. But I absolutely love that guy. He's so good at everything he does.
Yeah, this also has a Native American character in it named George, played by an actor named Joseph Running Fox, who was John Henry in Porky's 2 the next day. So.
So, Antonia Bird, who directed this, was not the first choice for the director. The original director got replaced 2 weeks in, and I guess Robert Carlyle suggested her based on working with her before, so that's pretty cool.
Yeah, you wouldn't think
this is... She was able to kind of pull this out of the ashes. She also directed Mad Love, starring Chris O'Donnell and Drew Barrymore.
That's probably why you've never heard of this movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're too busy watching Mad Love.
Right.
Can't pull your head out of that VHS copy.
One thing that kind of bummed me out about this movie, just on a personal level, like, it has nothing to do with the movie itself, I guess. But, you know, it takes place in the Sierra Nevada mountains, which are mountains that are like half an hour from my house, although, albeit far much north, is where this movie is supposed to take place. But they filmed the movie in Slovakia. So I was real bummed out because I really like those mountains. I was like, man, I can't wait to see these mountains. These mountains that I live next to, my neighboring mountains in this movie.
Yeah.
But then
you could have seen your house.
Yeah, I could have seen my house, but it turns out they were Slovakian mountains, and that makes me mad. Although Slovakia is sort of near Serbia, so maybe these mountains are all right after all.
Uh-oh.
Serbian mountains. You guys don't like Serbian mountains, or?
Well, I just wouldn't take my kid there. You know what I mean?
I see what you're saying.
Yeah, that just about wraps it up for our discussion of 1999's Ravenous. Stick around, because we are going to discuss Night of the Comet.
Did you know that there are two ways to help out Junk Food Dinner? The first way involves sacrificing a goat or a human baby on an altar made of dragon bones. Or, next time you're on iTunes, you can leave us a 5-star review. You can write the comment that says everyone should listen to Junk Food Dinner. You can add as many exclamation points as you want. This will help more people find the show on iTunes. Recording each episode of Junk Food Dinner is the most physically and emotionally taxing activity known to man. It leaves us exhausted and bloody after the show. The least you can do is give us a good review.
wonder what it would be like to be one of the last people on Earth.
We're going to
Ghost Town! I hope you see.
There's nobody. I mean, there's nobody.
What would you do?
The inside of the end of the world makes me a little nervous.
Where would you go?
The stars are up ahead!
Well, get ready to find out, because the comet is coming into your orbit.
The legal drinking age is now 10, but... No need ID. Let's be real.
It's the night of the comet.
What do you give me if I come back?
Texas? Night of the comet.
I'll be taking requests from all you teenage comet zombies.
The night the teenagers rule the world.
Yeah!
Night of the comet.
The burning of civilization is on us.
It's in the world.
Welcome back to Junk Food Dinner, episode 70. The final film we're going to be taking a look at tonight is Night of the Comet from 1984. This is a movie that I remember seeing on cable when I was a youngster, as Parker would say. And I didn't see it again until I was in my 20s, at which point I had a whole new appreciation for it. I mean, I liked it as a kid, but it was just kind of one of those ones that you saw once on cable and didn't really think about too much. But as an adult, I rewatched it and then rewatched it and rewatched it and rewatched it because I absolutely love this movie. This is one, ever since we started doing this podcast, it was one that I've always wanted to do because it's one that has definitely earned a place in my cult-loving heart ever since I kind of rewatched it again a few years back. But this movie stars Catherine Mary Stewart as Regina. You might remember Catherine Mary Stewart from Mark's favorite movie, The Apple. She was BB in that, which I love. And I also love her in this. She plays a teenage girl who works at a movie theater. This particular night is a busy night. People are coming in and out of the theater, but there's also all these parties in the street. Why? Because there is a big comet that's going to be going over this evening, and everybody's having a party. And so anyway, Regina's working at the movie theater, which is run by Weird Al's uncle from UHF. Which I thought was a delightful cameo, I guess you could say. So she's supposed to be doing the whole Usher thing, but instead she's up in the projection booth having sex with her goofy boyfriend, who is the projectionist at the theater. They end up spending the night up in the projection booth and miss all the festivities that are going on outside, which is a good thing because those that were dumb enough to stand outside and watch the comet were vaporized into ashes by the comet, and so it's basically the total apocalypse. Regina's sister, Samantha, played by the always lovely and fun Kelly Maroney, who was also in Fast Times at Ridgemont High and another one of my favorite movies, Chopping Mall, she also avoided being turned to dust by the comet by spending the night in the shed out back. And as we learn, the only people that survived this are ones who were encased in metal at some point during the comet's passing. Needless to say, the world is a ghost town. The LA area in which they live is completely deserted. The girls soon realize that not only is the area deserted, but it's crawling with zombies who have survived the comet but are now mutated, sickly, violent, and angry. So the two sisters, the always peppy cheerleader Samantha and the confident and badass Regina, they go off and they try to find other survivors. They go to a radio station where they team up with a gentleman named Hector, played by Robert Beltran, who you might remember from Eating Raoul as the titular Raoul. We also have, speaking of Eating Raoul, Mary Warnov comes into play as a scientist. They find out there's this government plot to harvest the youth of those who survived. So they're also out to get them. So Regina and Samantha and Hector are traveling across the country trying to avoid zombies, marauders, evil scientists, and all the while just trying to have a good time and do some shopping. I think this movie is endlessly fun. I think it's carried by the great performances by Catherine Mary Stewart and Kelly Maroney, who, like I said, are just unabashedly likable in this. I think Kelly Maroney is just super fun and spunky as the cheerleader sister, and Catherine Mary Stewart is just super great as Regina. It's, you know, it's a movie about Valley girls that survive the apocalypse, but it never is annoying, despite even when they're dancing around the mall to a bootleg version of Girls Just Want to Have Fun. You still can't help but revel in its 80s goofiness. I think the zombies look good. I think it has a really cool atmosphere. All the acting is good. It's got a lot of cameos, like I said, by kind of B-movie favorites. And, yeah, it's just all around really fun movie. So I'm excited to find out what you guys thought of Night of the Comet.
I have been waiting all week to talk about this. I had never seen this movie, and I loved it. I, like, could not stop talking to my roommates about this after they came home when I was watching it. It's so good. The performances are great. The soundtrack is great. The lighting is spectacular. The script is just fantastic. There's really a lot to love about this movie. The only thing that I regret is that I did not see this a billion times growing up. Yeah, like I said, I was really just kind of blown away by this. And it, you know, it kind of took me like right away just from the get-go. And like you said, there's a lot of great cameos. Mary Warrenoff, always fantastic. Again, some good twists and just some really crazy, you know, story and just a pretty original idea. A lot of cool little, you know, background jokes again, like when they're at the movie theater, one of the posters in the background is Death Race 2000, you know, with Mary Warrenoff. Another one is Red Dust, which I thought was really funny. And yeah, just a lot of really, really great stuff about this. Cool sets. Yeah, just going to get real gushy about this because I loved it.
Yeah, I everything that you guys have said, like the sets, the acting, especially the two main broads were phenomenal in this. Seeing Mary Warrenoff in anything is fantastic. The way it looks is great, like the outfits and, you know, the scenery and the neon everywhere is fun. I've seen this movie. I don't think I've ever seen this movie in one sitting, but I've probably seen it a few times, like watching parts of it, like if you added it all up throughout my life. But I haven't seen any of it in about 5 years. And seeing it all together made me realize that there's, and I mean, we've talked about this before, like when you have a movie where there's like no build up time, you know, really, like where the comet happens and everybody's dead, like within the first 10 minutes or whatever, like you got to keep your energy up. Like it happened in Night of the Demons where stuff happens right away and then there's kind of lulls. That happens in this. Like, you know, the first 20 minutes, I was like, man, this is awesome. This is totally awesome. This is crazy awesome. And I was like kind of sad that I picked Chud 2 the same way we were doing this because they're kind of similar. I was like, man, this is going to be so much better than Chud 2. And it's, you know, not fair to Chud 2 to do the similar but superior film. But then it, like, after the, you know, after the initial comet thing happens and people realize that they're the only people left on Earth, like, then a lot of nothing happens for a while. And, like, once they get to the radio station, like, just a whole lot of nothing for quite a bit. And then things kind of pick back up. And I think that's the double-edged sword of having your MacGuffin, as it were, happen, you know, so early in a movie. Like, you got to keep your energy up or things are going to lull. And that's kind of what happens in this movie. But, I mean, that's really my only complaint about it. Everything else about this movie is pretty much perfect.
Yeah, I mean, I agree that it does kind of slow down at parts in this movie. But nevertheless, it's always fun to watch. I mean, just having Catherine Mary Stewart and Kelly Maroney on screen together, just their combined energy is enough to keep things lively for me. And it's funny, too, because I think this is kind of like a weird movie in the fact that it has, you know, these two girls as the main characters, and they're not super sexualized in any way. I mean, despite the fact that, you know, Kelly Maroney is wearing a cheerleader outfit through this movie and Catherine Mary Stewart is having sex in the projection booth. I mean, it's not a TNA movie by any means. I mean, these girls kind of have their own, you know, they have their own personalities and their own strengths and their own weaknesses. They're kind of tough. They can fire guns and they, you know, and they kind of kick ass throughout the movie and they take care of themselves and they take care of each other. I mean, despite the fact that, you know, they have Robert Beltran show up to kind of be the hunky male lead. I think this is, I mean, I feel like this movie was almost aimed at a female audience and has a very female bent to it, even with the whole Mary Warrenoff thing. You know, she's one of the lone female scientists and one of the few ones that kind of has any sort of moral compass on her side. And I don't know, I think it's a very female-centric movie, and I think that's a total benefit to it because I think that's part of what separates this from a lot of the similar fare that came out around this time. Because, I mean, you know, like you mentioned, Bud the Chud, and, you know, there's a whole handful of these kind of 80s apocalyptic zombie movies that this could very easily be lumped in with. And in a lot of ways is, but I think one thing that keeps this apart from those is the whole female centricity of it and the way that the characters are portrayed. It's not, you know, it's not done for sexuality or just cheap TNA. It's to actually have, you know, interesting, complex, and strong female characters in the lead. And I think that's one of the main benefits of this movie.
Yeah, if those two characters were, like, less interesting or were played more as, like, damsels in distress or were played by lesser actresses.
Or played by two dudes, which I'm sure could have very easily happened.
Definitely.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, then that would certainly add to, like, if they were played by lesser actresses that didn't have the energy that these two have, then the lulls in the movie would have been downright boring. But just because they're there and doing their thing, like, it adds energy to parts of the film that have no energy.
Right.
Yeah, this had a real, you know, comic book kind of 50s movies vibe to it, and I really like that. Like, some of the weird kind of framing. There's that scene in the hallway when the girls are talking and the cheerleader is just kind of bouncing around, you know, back and forth on her feet, and they kind of, like, have the camera down by her feet, and it looks very much like a frame, you know, from a comic book.
Yeah.
I thought that was really cool. You know, just those kind of aesthetics really helped this movie along, in addition to the really natural kind of chemistry between the two female leads. Like, you know, I totally believe that they were, you know, sisters or whatever in this movie. So, I don't know. Again, really gushy and love this, and I'm probably going to watch it 100 times.
Yeah, absolutely.
Also, the zombies in this are some of the best zombies I've ever seen. They're magnificent.
Great, yeah.
Very, very scary zombies.
Yeah. And, you know, the way that they kind of describe how they, you know, if you were only sort of exposed to this radiation, you're going to turn into a zombie slowly. And I don't know, it's just, it's really original, and it just came across really well.
Yeah, and not only that, I mean, I think you've got actors that are also in some of my, like, other favorite movies of all time. Like, watching this whole movie, I was like, man, I really want to watch Eating Raoul, and I really want to watch Chopping Mall, and I really want to watch The Apple, and I really want to watch Death Race 2000. I mean, it just reminds you of why you love these actors, and it's just super fun.
Yeah, it's great.
This movie is very good. I feel like I came off hating it while I was talking about it, just because I had that
no,
on
I
great,
didn't,
but
I didn't get that.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, well, yeah, it's very good.
Yeah. All right, so that just about wraps it up for Night of the Comet and Episode 70 of Junk Food Dinner. We are going to take a very brief break, and we are going to come back and say goodbye to all of you lovely, lovely junk food junkies.
Nobody ever says, I want to be a junkie when I grow up.
All right, folks, another Junk Food Dinner in the books. We'd like to thank everybody for tuning in and listening. If you like the podcast and you like what you hear, or if you don't like what you hear, if you think we were too harsh on a movie or we liked a movie that you think is total garbage, please let us know by sending us an email at jfdpodcast@gmail.com or giving us a call on our voicemail line at 347-746-JUNK. That's 347-746-5865. And let us know what you think of the show. Also, if you're on the internet, and of course you are, because how else would you be listening to this, stop by junkfooddinner.com and check out our, I'll go out and on a limb and say, amazing website. I mean, where else can you find all the episodes of Junk Food Dinner right there in one convenient spot? You've got nerd news, you got trailers, you got links to all kinds of cool stuff. You can find all the links to find us on Facebook and Twitter. You can find links to subscribe to us on iTunes and have the podcast delivered directly to your iTunes or iPod or iPhone or whatever iDevice you have, iPad. You can be delivered immediately as soon as it's available just by clicking and subscribing to us on iTunes. If you really like us and you want to help spread the word about the show, please leave a review or a rating on iTunes. That is a really good way to help get the word out about Junk Food Dinner. So if you write a good review and put it on iTunes, We will love you forever, and we will sing your praises. So make sure you tune in next week. It's going to be a good show. We're going to be talking about Dead and Buried from 1981, Voyage of the Rock Aliens from 1984, and Sucker Punch from just earlier this year. So that should be a lot of fun, and I look forward to talking about it. So until next time, this is Kevin Moss, Mark Fredo, and Parker Bowman for Junk Food Dinner saying adios, everybody. We will see you next time.
No loco weed, no peyote, no women.